Okay, and we are recording. And if we could start over here and you could tell me your name, please.
I'm Jim York.
Okay, Jim.
Judy York.
Jan McCarthy.
Stephen Quackett.
Kelly Blustick.
Barbara MacGyver.
Carrie Westfall.
Thelma Aldrich.
Lynn Webster.
Lorna MacInnis.
Donald MacInnis.
Leslie Schlemmer.
We have some folks back there, too.
Joan Bell.
Dan Martin.
Yeah, we have some more. Yeah.
John Scully.
Evelyn Sandberg.
And even the photographer.
Mike Benzema.
So welcome to the Connecticut Crossroads Project. So we want to make this as much of a conversation as possible, so feel free to talk at each other and not just answer questions. You guys make this as robust as you want it to be. So first of all, I was curious if someone or if you all could sort of tell me a little bit of the history of the church, those of you who know it, and maybe just a quick snippet. Like, when did we start? How long have we been here? What's going on? So anyone?
301 years ago.
301 years ago. Okay, so any other important events in the history of the church? I know it was on the green at one point in time, right? Like smack dab in the middle of the green? Yeah?
Roger Sherman was a deacon.
Okay, fascinating. Any other information?
I believe the town hall used to be downstairs where fellowship is, and the rest used to be sanctuary. Do I have that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Is this the original building that was in this location? This spot right here?
Yes.
Okay. So, how long have you all been involved with the church? I mean, just start talking at me. It's okay.
71 years.
71 years. Is this the only church that you've been part of? What's your earliest memory of the church?
Sunday school.
Sunday school. Who was your teacher?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Do you? Who was the is it minister? Right. Minister. Who's?
Reverend Brown at the time.
And what was he like?
I remember him as a stern man. I don't know how accurate that is.
No, but that's fine.
That's a childhood memory.
So. Nobody's going to judge you from these recordings. Nobody actually listens to them, so it's okay. So, Reverend Brown, can you describe him to me?
Tall, bald, what hair he had was dark.
Okay.
Those are the physical attributes I remember.
What other ministers have there been? Besides Reverend Brown and obviously Reverend Moran, who to me is known as Coach Moran because he's my coach.
Russell Ayer was for a long time.
Yeah, when we joined the church, Russ Ayer was our minister at that point. And we've been here almost 41 years.
Wow. When did he leave?
Pardon?
When did he leave this minister?
27, 28 years ago, he retired. When Reverend Moran came in.
Okay. Oh, so Reverend Moran has been here that long. I didn't realize that. Any others? Any other ministers that people remember?
We've had some associate pastors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Leslie Foley,
Renette Hamilton,
mm-hmm. Roland Ewing. Did you get him?
Tom Grant.
Archie Aitchison.
Yes. You don't have to raise your hand. You can just shout at me.
I joined the church in 1944.
Okay.
And I was an 18-year-old. And in 1945, my husband and I were married in this church, and he passed away in 2016. And at that point, we had been the longest existing pair. To belong to the church.
That's such a special memory.
We had our 70th anniversary. They gave us a party here at the church, which was most memorable.
So I think that really touches on something that's really sort of special. There's a community here, right? And obviously, you've really been part of that. Can you talk about that community? What is it like? Like, what are the people here like? What does it make you feel?
Family.
Oh, she every week she says how wonderful it is when she comes to church. Everybody greets her, gives her a kiss and a hug. And I think it's a great family
yeah, for her. We had four children and they were all baptized in this church.
Wow. Can I ask why you so obviously you chose this church later in life at 18. Why did you?
Because she moved here.
Okay.
She moved here from somewhere else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I lived in New Milford before I was married and boarded here.
Okay.
And worked at the New Milford Hospital. And I became part of the church religious education committee. And I was in charge of the Sunday school.
Well, that must have been, it must be challenging doing Sunday school.
Yeah. No, it was wonderful because my children grew up with the other children and we all shared the same interests. It was very comforting to come.
Comforting, I think that's a great word. Does anybody else have any sort of feelings about the community here?
When I moved to New Milford, I decided, coming from a church in Bronx, New York, where I was very involved, I felt a little lost coming here, and so I church hopped. I went to different churches around New Milford to see where I would feel at home, and I felt at home here.
And why?
Family. Sense of family, sense of new beginnings, sense of involvement, enthusiasm at all ages, at all levels. And at the time, we had an assistant pastor who sort of was like a hippie, and he kind of did everything different on the last Sunday of the month. They called it Weird Sunday. Weird Sunday. And he would come up with a different thing.
Like what?
Oh, God. Charlotte, help me a bit. Could be dance, it could be music, it could be a thought put out.
Does anybody else remember this? No?
Who was the
Larry Reimer.
Oh, Larry.
Oh, wow.
Reimer.
Mm-hmm. Was that sort of thing met with complete acceptance in the church?
Oh, God, no. No, these staunch New Englanders. They welcomed it because it was part of the church, but they sort of rolled their eyes.
Right.
And that was very, very much part of living in the town of New Milford, because one of the job that I had here the longest, I was an administrator at New Milford Hospital, and the thing I would hear coming from New York was, we never did it like that before. What is this out-of-towner trying to pull? And it was strange because while in business there was that feeling, in church, despite it being very different, it was very welcoming. So
that's fabulous.
Different.
So I just sort of hear this thread a little bit. And I mean, I can sort of relate to it about maybe finding the spiritual organization that really fits to you. And some of you sort of mentioning that this sort of fell into that niche because of that feeling of family. Does anybody else want to sort of share how they came upon this church? I mean, if they did. Yeah, yeah.
So, Joan Phil, our son was five, time for some sort of religious education. My husband and I were both brought up Catholic. He's divorced, which is, I think, as people know, no in the Catholic Church. I have an older sister who's gay, another no-no in the Catholic Church. So I was very wanting to find a church that was more accepting, that was going to teach my son things that when he came home, I wouldn't say, no, that's not really the way it is. So although he was baptized in the Catholic Church, when, like I said, he was five. So I kind of went church shopping. I went to St. John's Episcopalian Church because that's kind of like Catholic light. I went to the Methodist Church, I went to the Lutheran Church, and I came to this church on a Sunday in May, and it was kind of rainy and dreary outside, and I came by myself first, and I came in, and one of the things that struck me was how wonderful the choir was and how much energy the choir choir, music had, and then that the fact that there were people who noticed that I was not normally in church and actually made a point of introducing himself. The first person who introduced himself to me was Nancy Camp, who's no longer with us. We've all got stories about Nancy. And then the Hendricks. And so I kind of went home all excited and said to my husband, I think I found the church. Come with me. And the next Sunday we came to church and we were greeted by, you're going to have to help me, this CE became a lawyer. Janet, yes.
Oh, Janet Harris.
Janet Harris, and the Harris family has lived in New Milford for forever. She was the CE director at the time. Right away, introduced herself to my son, you know, talked to us, brought us up to the church school, and you know, we joined the new members class and we're hooked. So it was the sense of energy, and the thing that I think at that time that set it apart from, say, St. John's was that there were a lot of families here. There were a lot of husbands. It wasn't just the wife and the kids at church. The family was there, and the fathers were there, and so that's, you know, this is why 17, 18 years ago it became home.
How about some other folks? Do you have some other refugees from other churches?
We came in 1995 and did the church hopping all around Brookfield, Bridgewater, New Milford, and we chose this church because of the way we were accepted. You know, there was a warm family feeling, which we liked. Plus, we liked the message and the style of delivery of Mike's sermon. He's a very good storyteller.
So those of you who have been here longer, I mean, how do you approach people who just sort of wander in, who you can tell maybe are church shopping or?
Well, I think it's important that we make the effort to go up to these people and introduce ourselves, because I think it's very easy to get into a clique and sit with the same people and talk to the same people. So I know what I try to do is look for a new face and try to make them feel welcome.
Yeah, when we, the first Sunday that we came here, it was in, I think, August, and we had four young boys. And the people who greeted us first were Gladys and Dan Cummings, and they were so nice. They took us under their wing, introduced us downstairs at coffee hour and everything.
That's great. Mrs. Aldrich, do you remember who greeted you the first time when you came here at 18?
Do you remember who greeted you at the church when you first came here when you were 18?
I can see their face, but I can't put a name on
it. I have that problem, too.
I know when we were married, someone had a party down in the fellowship room, and they had left the flowers, and we used those during our reception. So that was the friendship that we were greeted with. My husband had been a member here since he was in the PF as a teenager.
Wow.
His family was active in this church.
I had a little different experience because, unlike the long-standing sort of born-to-it members, I really came to this church pretty late in life. And I always likened it to being the stray cat that sits on your back porch one night and then grudgingly accepts a saucer of milk the next night, and next thing you know, you're in sleeping by the fireplace. And that's the way it felt for me here, because I sort of found my way in through the back door, and I would sit in a back pew. And many of you, of course, know Mary Roberts, and I happened to be sitting behind Mary several weeks in a row, and it had come the time of the service to sing the hymns, and Mary would say, "Young man, you sing rather well. You should think about joining the choir." Mary was the next school teacher, as a lot of you know, and the next week it was, "Young man, have you spoken?" And by the third week, she only had to look at me, and I knew it was time to go join the choir, which is what I did, and that not only prompted a lot of friendships, but then after some tough personal circumstances led me to become a member to my great delight. I can only speak to the welcoming aspect of this church and its membership, and it's made a huge difference for me.
I can absolutely hear Mary Roberts saying that.
Mr. Ewing was the minister at the time.
When she joined.
Okay, fabulous.
And my husband was in the service, and he came home on leave, and he had recently lost his brother over in Germany. So we went to Mr. Ewing and talked to him, and he said, well, you've been together for 4 years. I think it'd be a good idea if you got married. I think it'd get Charlie something firm to come back to. So
it's fabulous.
Mr. Ewing was the first pastor I knew here, and I had been going to the Northville Church, the Baptist Church, and when my mother died, I started coming down here with my sister. And the first thing I remember about this church that really got to me was the organ. up at the Baptist Church, we have one of those little pump organs that my mother used to play. And down here, it was just, to me, magnificent to hear the organ, and Doc Hunt was the organist. Doc Hunt, incidentally, was a relative of Charles Ives, whom you probably have heard of as one of the more important contemporary composers of this century, or last century. His name was Harold Ives Hunt, and he used to take me with him when he went teaching, taught music in the public schools, but when I would come home from college breaks, he would take me with him up into Warren and Washington and all the surrounding towns where he taught. And so he was like a mentor to me. And when he got ill and died, I took over the music program here for a while. And they were putting in a new organ, the one we have now. So our services were out here. And when I'm sitting here, I'm looking up there. That used to be all open. Okay. So some of the congregation would sit up there, and the rest of it would be down here. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then there was
there's
a piano, and
yeah.
See where the dark wood is? That was all open.
Yeah, there's a room up there.
Yeah, there, yeah. So that used to be, Mr. Ewing's office was up there, and the choir robes were down at that end, and those choir robes that were all black ones at the time, and I remember a group that I was with for a while, the Pointless Sisters, used to go up there and borrow those black robes when we went around singing at Marbledale Pub and different birthdays, and we helped a lot of people celebrate their 40th birthdays in this town.
Charlotte, we're expecting a song later.
Yeah, I think that should be part of this conversation. I think you need to sing for us.
Helen Airmaid did a write-up on the Pointless Sisters at one point, and it went into the church bulletin that came around quarterly. Anyhow, the organ was a big part of this church to me, and always was, and I joined the choir and brought some of my buddies from high school in, one of whom I still hear from, who lives in Montana now, and she often mentions this church. I sent her one of our hoodies to wear out there in Montana, which she's very happy to have. Through the years, let's see, Mr. Ewing and then Mr. Brown, you talked about Mr. Brown. To me, he was like a very boring college professor. I never understood really what he was talking about most of the time, and I was very happy when he left.
I wonder if that was just a child's eye view I had, or maybe not.
So, anyhow, then when he was only here a couple of years, I don't know what precipitated his leaving, but I was too young to realize then, but after that we got Mr.
We had a Fred Franzius that was here.
Oh, he was an associate pastor.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a lot of associate pastors that were wonderful.
Steve Thompson.
Larry Ryber that Barbara talked about. And a Fred Franzius who
Jim McGraw
left mysteriously. Jim McGraw.
I remember Jim McGraw. I was in PF at the time, and he, I think, thought that we were sitting here in New England and needed to broaden our horizons a bit. So took us down to a church in Red Hook, Brooklyn, the PF.
Well,
and that opened our eyes quite a bit as to how the rest of the world.
What is PF?
Yeah, I was about to ask.
Pilgrim Fellowship. And it's like the high school people would be in it. I'm sorry. But he took us down to Red Hook, and it was eye-opening.
Why?
A lot of us.
Why was it eye-opening?
Well, because it's a whole, we were at a black church, and their service was very different from ours. People were standing up and going, hallelujah. I've never seen that before. And a lot of singing, which was wonderful. But then they had us all downstairs to the fellowship room afterwards and cooked chicken, and I still remember it. It wasn't New Milford.
Right.
It was real.
It was very active.
Yeah.
So it's no longer active. It's not a thing anymore.
I don't know. Do you have Pilgrim Fellowship, or do you have youth group?
Yeah, we have youth group.
It's just called youth
group,
not Pilgrim Fellowship.
Okay.
Yeah, because there used to be YPF, which was like middle school,
yeah.
And then PF,
yeah.
Which was the high school section. So.
Were you a member of PF, sir? I see you nodding.
No.
Okay.
We came after.
Okay.
We came probably 50 years ago.
67.
60. So we didn't join the church for maybe a couple years. But I have to say, probably the reason that we joined this church was because of Russ Ayer. Because when we came, we loved him. He was just great. And I don't know if that's a good reason to join a church, but I have to really say it. That was why we joined this church, was because of Russ.
And do you, did you get that sense of community that people talk about as well, the sense of family?
Well,
or was it
there were more, when we joined, it was a much more congregants here.
I mean,
it was a lot of people. Like Christmas, if you didn't come early, you didn't get a seat,
right.
Basically. And they had, at one point, there were three services, I believe, at Christmas time, plus two at Easter. And it was crowded. The church was crowded. And there were times that if you didn't come for the, not the early Easter service, the later one, which I think was at 11,
mm-hmm.
which was more popular, obviously, if you didn't come half an hour early, you stood in the back of the church. I mean, am I remembering it correctly?
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Interesting. So I get the feeling that the church has changed then. Is there fewer people coming?
Oh, absolutely.
Are there fewer people coming, pardon me?
Absolutely, I think.
The church reflects the sign of the times,
yeah.
Of what's happening,
yeah.
As far as religion, across many, many Christian churches.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot bigger youth group too.
Yeah.
Right.
Back.
There's so many other things going on the Sunday now that competition.
Right.
Sports,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's I've about three or four questions floating around in my head that I've picked up, but let's focus on this change thing for a bit. Can you all talk about how you've seen the church change since you became members? Whether it's you've been members your well, why don't we start with Mrs. Aldrich? Because she's been here the longest, correct? So
they wanna know what changes you've seen in the church.
That many changes. It's just very friendship. I'm now living alone, and I come into church, and I'm greeted by all these people, and it's a wonderful feeling.
It's great.
Various changes in dress. When I was a kid, you had to wear a suit going to church.
what's your name, sir? You get introduced at the beginning.
Fred Camp.
Fred Camp.
I'm a newcomer. I moved to town 20 years ago.
Okay. So, anybody else changes?
I don't think the church has changed. One thing that I really like about this church is that it's open to everything. As our whole world changes, any pastor that we've had here has kind of brought us along with the changes. I just think it's an easy church to belong to. It's friendly. The ideals here and, well,
it's the fellowship.
It's the way I believe. I mean, I'm so comfortable here.
I think it's more evolved than changed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's evolved to keep up with the way
couldn't
things
think
are.
Of that word.
Huh.
Well, I would say, I mean, there's a lot of people around the table. We're a democratic church.
Okay.
So a lot of us have been deacons, which helps with the leadership of the church. We served for 4 years. So I know, you know, I was looking when we had the roof issue and we were up in the parish house, I was looking at the numbers. We had some history of the number of people who used to come to church and kind of looking at what was happening when we were outside of the church. And as Judy said, there used to be 200, 300 people
mm-hmm.
in the sanctuary every Sunday,
mm-hmm.
where that's now an Easter Sunday or a Christmas Sunday. And some of that is attributed to the fact that Little League is on Sunday mornings, or it's the only day of the week that people don't have to race off to someplace.
Right.
A lot more people, I think, today, and I don't know when that would have started, both the husband and the wife work full time. So I think that we do have smaller numbers. We do have fewer people coming to church. I think you can look back and I used to hear stories from Nancy Camp and Nancy Tutson and you know, people would come here on a Friday or a Saturday night for a social outing. There would be dinners or there would be activities. And so it's a challenge. It's a challenge to get I remember, you know, it's not that long ago, but 15, 16 years ago, feeling like, okay, we're part of the families. And the families come in, and they generally are helping with the Christian education program and maybe fellowship. And you kind of transition through your church life as your kids grow up out of school. You know, maybe you move over to help on trustees or become a deacon. We're seeing fewer young families jump in with both feet and get involved. It's not like it doesn't exist at all, but there's so many conflicts for their time, right? And I think that that's a prevalent, not just in this church, but in most churches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are churches that are growing in the area, but they have a coffee bar and they've got lattes and they've got, you know, so, you know, it's kind of like, how do you keep your sense of tradition and your sense of community and changing with the times, but also, you know, you want the church to be here another 300 years, ideally, right?
Right.
It's an amazing legacy that we have.
So I think this dovetails perfectly into a question I had. So history nerd, right? How does it feel to be part of this legacy, right? So like, I own an old house. And owning an old house is just being a steward. In some ways, I feel like all of you are stewards of this church in some ways. Even though it's helping you through your spiritual life, you're part of this legacy, this wonderful New England congregational legacy. So how does that feel?
I think that's really a powerful theme here, because if you flash back to 300 years ago, and I really don't remember it all that well, it was almost indistinguishable between this church and the governance of the town of Milford.
Mm-hmm.
They were one.
Right.
And the authority and presence of the church greatly influenced, even controlled, a lot of how the town operated. And over time, of course, with the growth of the town, the change of society and everything else, that's less true, and that's probably a healthy change. But I think when we talk about the church evolving, I think one of the ways it's evolved that most appeals to me is that probably starting most notably with Russ Ayers and certainly carried on with Mike, is that this church has maintained a sense of mission around the larger community. You know, what is our place for social responsibility as well as whatever we do among ourselves? And I think that's really helped the New Milford community in very important ways. And I think it's also indicated by the openness of the church to members that come from many kinds of backgrounds and many kinds of directions. This is a very non-judgmental, open, receptive place, as it might not have been with the Puritan leaders of 300 years ago. But I think more than anything else, that's how we collectively have evolved to more of a social responsibility, more of a welcoming, more of an ecumenical approach. And one of the things I most like about this church is its willingness to cooperate with other churches and other faiths and to do things for the common good, as opposed to some denominations that are so insular and so closed that they don't share in the larger mission of the community. And I think that's one of the great gifts that this group provides.
I know when I was young, there was no synagogue here in town. There was no building. Mm-hmm. There was a congregation, but there was no building. But our church was their building, where they met, until they built their own synagogue. And, you know, I think that all goes back to what you're mentioning.
Chris, may I tell a funny story?
Please,
about
please, yeah.
I was a teenager, and it was sometime after the war ended. One day around noon time.
I was going to make that joke, but I think it'd be appropriate.
It wasn't civil, right?
And all of a sudden, from the steeple of this church, came the loudest Betty Goodman sextet you ever heard. I mean, it just covered the town. Somebody had gotten up into the steeple and put on a Betty Goodman record. So this was playing all over New Milford. Well, it was so funny, and I can't. Do you remember that, Thelma?
Do you remember Benny Goodman music coming out of the steeple?
Yeah.
The question is, did they ever figure out who did it?
Were there people dancing on the green?
Well, we think we know who did it.
don't record it. We don't want it on tape.
No.
I think you're all really speaking to the fact that this church, despite its sort of a spiritual purpose, is really part of the community writ large. It has its own community, obviously, and all of you are part of that, but it's really part of New Milford. And I was hoping maybe some of you could speak to that outreach portion. How do you guys work with the community? What do you do? What sort of organizations and committees are there that work with the community?
Two things. One is the Baby Bundles program, which was started by a family in town that wanted to help children, infants, said, you know, like we all grew up with hand-me-down. You were done with your crib, you passed it on to somebody else, and the Jones family decided that they were done with their crib, was there a family in need, and they started collecting baby items and distributing to families in need. And this church was a supporter of that. And as the Jones family ended up not being able to continue it, the church did. And we are not, it's not just a church organization, but our church has been the one working it through. I've been with it 15, 20 years now. And we distribute baby items, but diapers also, anything we can do to help young families that are really in need that just don't have any other assistance anywhere else. It may seem like something simple, but a pack of diapers, some baby clothes, anything like that. Once a month we distribute that, and anything we can do. And this church has really done the massive end of supporting that. But also the homeless shelter. If you think back to the 20 years ago when we had one of those winters that was just unbelievable, and the homeless had no place to go whatsoever, and Reverend Moran and a number of other ministers got together and said, we've got a horrendous November coming. We already knew that it was going to be bad. And they got together and they said, what can we do? And when they looked into it, the state wouldn't allow us to open a homeless shelter of any length of time. 28 days, that's it. You can have a shelter open. So each church took their turn. They stepped up. The churches all around, Northville, what used to be the Rock Church, the Catholic Church, the synagogue, and they said, we'll take them for 28 days, and then the state requires that we move everything. So they got some money together, they got the equipment for people to sleep, blankets and cushions and everything else, and every 28 days, and here 20 years later, we're still doing the same thing. Every 28 days, they pack everything up, there's volunteers that move on to the next church that supports it. And that was the type of thing that Reverend Moran knew this church could support. And he said, what can we do? And we said, we'll do whatever it needs. And everybody has volunteered in some way to help with that sort of thing in a community that 20 years later still has a need for homeless, and this is how we do it.
That's amazing. That's really special.
Mm-hmm. There's also senior housing that took place. I don't know the details of it, but was it Reverend Air?
Reverend Air,
yeah. Butterbrook and
Butterbrook.
Glen Air and
Chestnut Grove.
Chestnut Grove, the three of them. We provided the seed money that got it started.
Oh wow, I didn't realize
church
that.
Provided the seed money.
We used to get together in coffee hours and write letters to politicians about different issues. I remember down there were so many of us all writing letters and
what sort of issues? What sort of issues? Do you remember anything specific?
Do you remember was that when God is Dead was prevalent at that point and
it's fine if you don't remember.
I can't remember,
it's
but
fine.
I just remember writing a letter.
I can't remember what I ate for
dinner. One other thing that happens regularly is, in spite of our own need for monies for operating the church and for our repairs, we still take collections regularly to support the community food bank as well. So people are giving collectively for that.
We have events that collects money for scholarships.
Okay.
For youngsters going on beyond high school, and that's been going on for many years, and it's very helpful.
At least 40 years, at least.
Yeah, so it's called the A. Russell Ayer Scholarship,
okay.
Which is named, as you can tell, after A. Russell Ayer. I happen to be the chairperson right now. So I think it's 40, don't quote me, but 40 years, and it's we don't give out a ton of money because we try to help more students, give some money to more students,
right.
Then, but it's not just students of this church, it's students in within the New Milford community. I've actually even gone up to Henry Abbott Tech and given out scholarships because they are a New Milford student,
right.
They're attending school there. And it's generally enough for, you know, maybe textbooks for a semester. So we give them in honor and now in memory of A. Russell Ayer. And then some years ago, Jen Albright, I think, was chairperson then, they started an additional scholarship as part of that in memory of Mike, or in honor of Mike Moran.
Oh.
And so we tend to, that one is given to a church member who's deserving. So it's usually somewhere between a dozen and 25 kids that we, every May, we give out scholarships to. Applications
right.
are due the first. Review coming up.
And most recently, we've been involved as a church in the New Milford Refugee Resettlement with the other community churches in town, and have sponsored a family came last year and has been settled, and we were involved in that as well. Hands-on,
mm-hmm.
raising funds, moving, doing a lot to help that family.
What about, sort of at a, so we talk about these sort of big programs. What about at a personal level? I'm sure there's a lot of.
Well, there just a few weeks ago there was a family that lost a home in a fire, and money was given to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And that has happened frequently where over the years that I've been in this church, which has been many, where people have had catastrophic situations happen in their lives, and donations have been made.
Charlotte, you want to talk about Meal Chain?
Hmm?
You want to talk
chain.
About Meal Chain?
Meal Chain.
Food.
The Meal
Chain.
The light bulb just moved.
I was going to say something earlier about how giving and loving is and how supportive this church is. I've had a couple of years of kind of tough living, and this church hopped right in, and I had meals brought to me for maybe 2 months, and then I talked to Leslie, and I still needed a little more, but then they were right there with me, and this guy here and Jen have been angels. He's a chef. It's just been wonderful, and the support, the love, and everything else, you know, to be able to talk, and to Mike has been wonderful, and Leslie, and everybody. It's the meal chain is wonderful. I mean, it's not just for me, but
right.
People who are in hard times, it's just a great, great thing to do. It's
new mothers, somebody who's experiencing an illness, just difficult times. They've got to take a loved one to doctors, and they're running here and there.
It's not just local either. One of our members has a family connection to the Philippines, and that area was hit by disasters. And that family organized an appeal among the congregation here for us to support a community most of us will never ever see in the Philippines to get them all the essentials they needed to get through the disaster.
Wow.
We also have a prayer shawl ministry, the Chapel Stitchers. It was started in 2009, and since 2009, I want to estimate that we've given away about 600 shawls. A good amount of them were made by Thelma. And it's a lovely ministry we give to people that are, ill and hurting, or we also give them good times, and for your baby, we have baby blankets we give to our confirmation class. It's an amazing group of women. We meet once a month, and I'm a slow knitter. It takes me a year to finish something, and every month these ladies bring in like all this stuff, and I'm amazed. So it's a wonderful ministry, and very good. We don't only give to our congregants. Someone will come to me and say, my cousin in California has cancer, can we send a shawl? And we do. So it goes out into the community. I have donated lap blankets to the cancer center here in New Milford. I have donated things to hospice in Danbury. So it's far reaching, and it's a warm and giving and loving and caring ministry.
When the tragedy happened in Sandy Hook, we said, oh, let's send prayer shawls. And I remember Leslie and I going through the bins, and we had
22. We had just enough, and there was a church member who is a therapist who was going to meet with the families, like in the front line. She was going there first, and she was able to bring the shawls to those families. It was just, it gives me goose pimples, because it seems like it was meant to be. It was providence that it was meant to be. It seems like a lot of times that happens with the shawls. You'll have one like, who am I going to give this to? And there'll be a need all of a sudden for that particular shawl.
And you'll be like, oh, who wants turquoise and pink? And somebody will walk in, they'll go, oh, that's my niece's favorite color. And off they go.
So it's a wonderful ministry.
There were also people from this church that responded to 9/11. And they went down and they helped in the church down there serving meals. I think it's obvious that this isn't just a Sunday crowd.
No.
That's kind of nice to know as a member of the church that there's always somebody there that'll call, send a card, offer a meal, offer a ride. It's just phenomenal.
There's also the reception, regular reception of some of you have a service here. When you lost somebody, they break out all the silver, we all make little sandwiches and cookies, and it is just heartwarming to see. And white gloves, serving tea, coffee. It's lovely. It really is really heartwarming.
The amount of support and community here is just completely palpable. I mean, I'm moved just hearing all this. So let's talk about Nancy Camp, because someone had mentioned that everybody has a story about Nancy Camp. So let's have some let's have story time about Nancy Camp.
Get your earring.
Yeah, all right. So I didn't know. I certainly am a newcomer and did not know Nancy Camp as long as other people who will start to tell stories. But I'll tell two stories, and you're going to have to pardon the language on the one. Nancy Camp always dressed really nicely, and in particular, always wore stilettos. She always wore a nice pair of shoes. She probably owned, I don't know, 100 shoes. If she had an outfit on and was pale pink, it was pink shoes, green shoes, whatever. So one day I'm up in the parish house prepping for church school before church starts, and Nancy's in there making copies or doing something. And I turned to Nancy and I went, I don't know if I can say this in this crowd. I will abbreviate. I said, oh my God, Nancy, what are those? Come here. Come hither and F me shoes, and it came out of my mouth. Now, I'm 55, and Nancy would be 75, right? So
CFM shoes.
Right? So quite clearly a little bit older than me, and I went, oh my God, I'm sorry, Nancy. And she goes, I'm just thrilled that you think somebody would want to. So that was one story. We were at a women's retreat, and it happened to be, and it was the one I think Leslie took us down, not this Leslie, but Leslie Foley took us down on the shoreline, and it was the quiet one, where you, like a lot of the time, you were supposed to not talk, and we're not really a very quiet group. And any of these retreats we go on are generally supposed to be alcohol free. Again, that doesn't work with our group. So we're in a room where literally nuns have taken us down to our room. And there are little stark beds and little dresser, right? And Nancy pops out a six pack of beer. And we realize we have no bottle opener, right? We have no opener. And Nancy goes, she takes the bottle and goes, the end of the dresser, and pops open the beer. And we're just like, already then. So great woman, a lot of fun.
I knew this was an AA meeting.
I see.
Any others? No. So I just wow, I'm sort of at a standstill. Alex, do you have any questions? So I think we'll sort of wind down here. I'm going to leave some time so that if people want to, they can make personal, we can do one-on-one conversations later on, maybe at the library. But I'd really like to thank all of you for coming and sharing your stories and sharing your memories and really making me realize that this, you know, building that's been on the hill that I've been to for like meetings and things like that really is this very unique community. And
community within a community, I think.
Yeah.
A little niche community within a community. It's really awesome to see.
It's got a heart and it's got a soul.
Yeah.
Does anybody have anything else they want to share before I switch it off? No? Okay, well, thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.